Question number 13426. Harold van der Wolf, reel 6.
Mr. van der Wolf, reel 6. Now, you were placed on the signal staff of the fourth holding battalion. That would be their signal section.
That's right.
And what were you doing with them?
Well, all he did was ran the signal office. That was taking messages and sending out telegrams for deserters and leaves and extensions. And surprisingly, how many telegrams went out to apprehend deserters. I suppose we dealt with 300 to 400 telegrams in and out a day. Well, it was a first-class job. I mean, it was a super number. And Corporal Millington turned out to be quite a good bloke. Well, then we went to Sedgefield.
The whole battalion?
The whole unit moved to Sedgefield. But in between all this, I was playing football for the battalion, hockey, having a wonderful sport like badminton. I mean, it wouldn't all work.
Were you getting your fitness? I mean, were you still B2, or did you get up to
No, A? I was... Well, I think I finished up B1. But I was keeping goal for the unit, and keeping goal for the signal unit, and keeping goal for the company. So I was playing football several times a week.
Now, the war would be over by then, both in Europe and Japan.
Well, I was... Yeah, that's interesting you should say that, because when I was serving me 7 days defaulters at Bishop Auckland, it was VE Day.
So not much chance to celebrate.
Remember, so I didn't celebrate. And VJ Day, I was on duty in the signal office. So I didn't celebrate VJ Day. But anyway, we went to Sedgefield, and the adjutant came in one day and he said to Corporal Millington, I want you to go to Catterick on a 10-week instructor's course. Because he said, we're going to set up a unit. Or he said, we're anticipating setting up a unit to train signalers. We wanted an instructor. So Corporal, nobody wanted to go to Catterick to an instructor's course. I mean, Catterick, which was the home of the signals, was notorious for its discipline. So nobody wanted to go. And Corporal Millington, being he was a lawyer, a trainee lawyer in civvy life. He said, well, sir, he said, my demob number is 26. It's obviously hardly worth sending me. I would suggest that you send the bloke with the highest number, demob number, which turned out to be yours truly. So I said, thank you, Corporal Millington, in front of the adjutant was a nice chap. And adjutant said, well, van der Wolf, you better go then. So off I trot to Catterick. When I arrived there, the officer says, you can't stay. You're not an NCO. I was a private, you see. He said, this is a course for NCOs and officers. So I said, fair enough. I have to, you take things in. Well, he said, everybody has to take an entrance test. He said, we've got 200 here. He said, I want to keep 150. Probably 50 will fail their entrance test. So he said, whilst you're here, you just as well take your entrance test. And then if you pass it, if your unit make you up to a Lance Corporal, you can perhaps come on the next one. So anyway, took the test. Now, I hadn't really, there was a stuff there that I hadn't really dealt with for years. Anyway, come the end of the day, he called me in and he said, I'm short of one member for the course. You've passed. So he said, I'm going to make you up to local acting unpaid Lance Corporal to keep you here. So I was promoted to local acting unpaid Lance Corporal. So up went Miss Strike. I enjoyed the 10-week course. It was very, very strenuous.
What were you learning? Anything new? Or was it just revision?
Well, no, I had to learn a lot about the 22 set, the 19 sets, which I hadn't really dealt with.
They're the big sets.
That's right. and of course how to organise, how to set up examinations for Morse coding, you know, how to distance to know how long a message would last and all this sort of thing, and the theory of sound, theory of all sorts of things. It was a very interesting, but I mean, a lot of blokes, I don't know why they were there. They didn't seem to worry whether they passed the course or not. But the discipline was very strict. But you did have a lot of freedom evenings. Mind, there again, I played football for the unit because they used to set up a... I was there during the winter and we had a football team there. And I played football. Now, at the halfway stage, I was approached by... there were three of us. And we were interviewed. Now, the gradings was a D if you were top. And then you got an A, B, C for theory and an X, Y, Z for practical. So you could either get a D, which was the top, or you could get an A, X, or an A, Y, or an A, Z, or a B, Y, X, you know, that sort of thing. Now, it was said on the course that most blokes came out with a C and a Z. You know, that's what the general sort of feeling was. And that your chances of getting a D was very remote. Well, I was interviewed and asked that at the end of the course, if I got a D, would I be happy to stay there as a sergeant instructor? And I said, no, I can't make that promise because my adjutant has obviously sent me here for a purpose and... I've got to honour that commitment. Well, when I went back into the hut and told the chaps what happened, they said, well, you've had your D. You won't get your D if you won't stay here. Nobody gets a D. Nobody's loaded out with a D, you know. Well, one of the three of us agreed to stay there as a sergeant, and he got a D. I got a BX. I got an average for each. No, BY. So I got an average for each. I did question the officer when he handed me my result as to how I dropped from a prospective D to a BY in half the course, second half the course, and he just shrugged his shoulders. But my adjutant was very happy with the result, made me up a corporal straight away, and then I was getting married. Because I was playing football for the unit, one thing or another. But this time we'd moved to Hartford Bridge, near Bedlington. And I had my bands read at Bedlington Parish Church. And and all the invitations were made out, you know, Corporal Van der Wolf and Marjorie and Wilcott. Right? And I had a phone call from the battalion CSM. Saying, look, if you'd like to come up to the battalion orderly room, I've got a wedding present for you. So I said, well, that's very nice. Went up, and he gave me part one orders, and I'd been promoted sergeant, backdated to the date that I'd been made up corporal. So my wedding present was the sergeant's promotion plus the back pay. It was interesting because there were four of us doing corporals, doing sergeant's jobs. And the other three said to me one day, we're going to go and see the adjutant, who was called Innes, and ask him for our third stripe. I said, look, if they think that we are worthy of a third stripe, they'll give them to us. Go and ask him for it, though. Yeah. So they said, well, we're gone. I said, well, I'm sorry. I don't feel the way you feel about it. I was the only one that got the third stripe. They didn't get the third stripe. But, you know, the army isn't the place that you go asking for promotion, or that, in my opinion. So I finished up as a sergeant signal instructor. We moved from Hartford Bridge to Bransworth Castle, which was the depot for the Durham Light Infantry. And we never set up a training program. I just became sergeant of the signal office. And also disciplined sergeant for the camp. And I had my last 12 months, I suppose, in the army. I came out in 47. I was made sergeant in 46. It was wonderful. I had a wonderful time.
What about being disciplined sergeant? Was that onerous?
The only problem was that I was called up by the adjutant and asked, and he said that the RSM was complaining that there weren't enough people being put on a charge. And I said to him, well, I thought as discipline sergeant my job was to maintain discipline and not to wait until they'd done something wrong and then just bang them in. And ONSE was, I got on well with him. Whether it was because I played football, I don't know, because he was a great football fan, but he asked me if I would sign on, you know.
Full-time, regular.
Regular. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but my wife wouldn't like to be a regular serviceman's wife, I don't think.
So you came out in 47?
Yeah.
When about 47?
July. I was officially demobbed at the end of August because you get 6 weeks leave, something like that.
And what were you planning to do? You decided to come out.
Well, whilst I was at Bransworth, you were given the opportunity to be interviewed by employers. I went to Leeds and was interviewed by the chief inspector of Hepworth, you know, who I used to work for before I went into the army. And he was nice enough, and he was obviously pleased to think that one had made sergeant and, you know, not stayed in. His general attitude was that, well, if you made well in the army, you'd make well in the shop, you know. And so I got, well, I mean, they had to give you your job back, really, but I went to Exeter. I came out and went to Exeter with Hepworth. Well, I went to Cheltenham for a month, and then I went to Exeter, which was a manager's training branch. After I'd been there about 3 weeks, the manager at Truro was taken ill, and I was sent there as relief manager. He died, and I remained relief manager there for 12 months, and then came back to Bodmin as manager of the branch at Bodmin. And then we had a new inspector who was a first-class swine, and that's the only word one can use. And quite a lot of us didn't like him and packed it in. He wanted me to go to Biddeford. The manager at Biddeford was the manager who had been manager at Wells, and he was noted that if you wanted to buy if you went in to buy a colour stud, he'd sell you overcoat. You know, he was a wonderful. And we used to have managers sort of conferences at Plymouth, and he told me he was retiring, and he said, I've heard it rumoured that you're going to be offered the Biddeford shop. He said, it's no good, Harold. He said, the shop isn't going to do anything, so don't take it. So I said to the inspector, I wasn't going to take it. So he said, well, I don't know what to do with you. I said, well, don't bother, I'll give you a fortnight's notice, just like that, because I was married. The wife was working at East Cornwall Hospital. We didn't have any kids at that stage. But I walked out the shop lunchtime and thought, crumbs, what have I done, you know? So I walked straight up to St Lawrence Hospital, saw the chief male nurse, asked him for a job as a student nurse. So he said, but you know, you're a manager. So I told him exactly what happened. And he said, well, you're a bit, you know, rash. So I said, well, he's going to mess me around. I said, I've moved more times than I did in the army with Hepworth. So he said, when can you start? I said, in a fortnight's time. He said, well, your dad works here, your eldest brother works here. I don't want any references. You start on the 23rd or
21st. As a student nurse?
As a student nurse.
And that's where you stay?
And I finished up as a nursing officer, yeah.
No, you'd had quite some psychological problems with the war.
Yeah.
Had they one set of problems, the shell shock, when had that finished, would you say? I mean, the blast effect,
well,
headaches, things like that.
Yeah, that finished. When I was at West Hartlepool, I was befriended by a family there who became to me a second mum and dad. I met them through the church, and they helped me tremendously. They sort of gave me a home away from home. I used to go there weekends, and they had a daughter and a son. The daughter was caught in a bloke who was in the Navy, and we were all friends together, but just friends, you know. And they helped me tremendously. There was no doubt about that. They gave me the sort of home life and the home comforts and got me back to good health.
So it stopped there.
That's right.
While you were at West Hartlepool. Yeah. And when did the second problem, the flashback, start?
Well,
roughly.
I would say 5 years after.
So after you'd left the army?
After I'd left the army, yeah.
And how long did that last for?
Oh, it lasted until around about the 40th anniversary of D-Day, so...
So it was until quite recently?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw one of the psychiatrists that I worked with, and I was getting a depression due to this, and I saw a psychiatrist that I work with, and talked to him about it. And he said, look, I think you should go back. Because nowadays they reckon you should, but in those days they didn't reckon you should. That this was a sort of an advanced theory by the psychiatrist. He's dead now, poor old chap. But he never lived to know that. Because he was on holiday when I went across to Normandy, and he died in his car on holiday, and he never knew that the treatment worked, really. But I went back with friends and actually saw the spot where I'd killed the German. In fact, the village of Lingers hadn't changed at all. I found the place.
How did you feel? I mean, was it cathartic, or did it just replace the image in your head? How did
well,
it work?
Well, I don't know how it worked. I just went back and... I know I said to the bloke that there was we used to have neighbours next door, and they always said that when their kids grew up, they would take us back to Normandy. And they're about 10 years younger than us. And their kids went to university, so they took us to Normandy. And we went down into Brittany afterward. But we went there and we looked through this village, and I stood by the tree. And I said to my mate, this is the tree that bothers me, and this is where it happened. And it was as simple as that.
Thank you very much.